There are some things you should always check, like the hygiene rating on your local takeaway, the setting on your razor, and whether the party actually is fancy dress. The other thing you should check is your Experian credit report, especially if you're looking to borrow money. It lets you understand what lenders see, so you can increase your chances of getting the best deals. It's dead easy to check it, and completely free. See it in seconds. Download the Experian app today.
Hey everyone, I'm Dan Bulva, writer and editor at Entrepreneur.com, and welcome to How Success Happens, the show where I talk to incredible people who do incredible things. Now, unfortunately, we've got a couple of slackers on the show today. James Patterson is the best-selling author of everything. He sold about 500 million books worldwide, and that is not an exaggeration. And with him is Dr. Patrick Ledin, Franklin Covey Senior Advisor, leadership expert, and best-selling author himself. Together, they've authored Disrupt Everything and Win, Take Control of Your Future. You might see a copy or two in the background of Patrick right now. I'm not sure if you could tell. It's a new release that shows how things like AI and workplace upheavals aren't something to fear and try to survive through, but that we can take control of and thrive in, which sounds awesome to me because I hate being terrified. So let's find out what the book is all about. Welcome, James and Patrick.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
James, great to talk to you again. I spoke to you a little while ago when your memoir came out. So at my count, that means you've written a lot of books. But this is your first business book. So what inspired you to do this?
I was in business for quite a while, and I've had two careers, both quite successful, actually. And in both cases, it's been positive disruptions that made it happen for me. Advertising, just one quick example. I took no advertising courses, no marketing courses. I wanted to get into J. Walter Thompson. And the normal route is you do a portfolio and you give it to them. What I did is I did a portfolio, and then the second week I brought another portfolio, and the third week I brought a third portfolio. So I disrupted the process, and they hired me in the third week. And it went that way all the way through Thompson. I became their youngest CEO at 37 or something like that. And then in publishing, same sort of thing. A Publishers Weekly said I changed publishing forever. But once again, it was just positive disruptions. The notion there was you do a book a year. This year I'm doing 9 books. And initially they objected to that. But then they said, okay, this actually makes sense. And what I've always done is question things. Does this really make sense? Why would you only do one book if you could do more? One book is fine, or one book every 2 years is fine, but you don't have to be held back. And that's a piece of what this book is about. It's really about two things. It's dealing with disruptions, which can be chaotic and really disturbing. So there's a negative thing here, and that's a reality, and then positively dealing with and positive disruptions. And I've had to do both in the two careers.
I love that you differentiated those two, because I think I'd love to get your thoughts, Patrick, on the word disruption, because I think in the entrepreneurial world, it signifies like I invented something that changed everything. But James, what you just described wasn't about inventing stuff. It was just like doing it in a way that made sense to you.
That's my path. And this book is not a one size fits all. There's a lot of different things in different ways. Some is for entrepreneurs. Some is for, there's a lot of things that happen here. But I'm sorry, Patrick, go ahead.
Yeah, disruption is a big word, right? We've studied it. We've seen what successful people have done in the face of disruption. And I would say to everybody listening that we're all the disrupted. We're getting hit with things left and right and curveballs every day. But some of us choose to be disruptors. Some of us choose to say, okay, in the advent of technology shifts or supply chain problems or just the upheaval in your own organization, what can I do about it? And as you said, these are some things that we study people with all walks of life. It was a 3-year study that I led at Vanderbilt University, and we interviewed hundreds of people and surveyed thousands more. And some of the disruptions that they had were small things that stopped them in their tracks, very unique to them, like a report from a doctor or a conversation in the hallway. And other things are the most horrific things that you wouldn't want to wish on your worst enemy. But in each of these stories, the big, the small, the ubiquitous, the unique, each of these stories, we saw how people followed a process that said, I'm not just going to react, I'm going to think about this. I'm going to lean into my strengths and I'm going to achieve some really cool results. And as we looked at that, we started to realize there's this pattern that falls out that the best of the best do. And we want people to be able to apply this no matter what's going on in their world.
Yeah, at every level, at every level. I can't imagine that there's any corporation, any small business, any entrepreneur who will not benefit from this. Because we're all going to face with these things. We can't put our heads in the sand and pretend that it's going to go. It's not going to go away.
Right.
It's massive. It's artificial intelligence is obviously huge. I'm not being political, but the things that are going on from the government every week, every day, there are things that are happening. Tariffs, et cetera, economic uncertainty, things like the pandemic. It just changes everything. Everything seems to change every day now. Yeah. And I don't think any of these things are accidental. And I think they're going to keep happening. That's why this thing is so timely.
Yeah.
Disrupt everything and win and do it right now. Because if you put your head in the sand, you're going to get disrupted. You're going to be a disruptor, a disruption. And it happens at every level. And the book deals with it at every level. Our publisher, they have two new people that came in to run the company. For their mission to work, it means that every editor must disrupt the way they've been doing editing. It means that the sales department must disrupt the way they've been. Everybody in that company, the receptionist, must disrupt the way they greet people at the door. And insofar as that happens, the mission works. Insofar as it doesn't happen, the mission doesn't work as well. And or your team at a business, or your small company. If you can't disrupt, if you can't get people to follow the mission, to improve the mission, to contribute to the mission, then the company, the business doesn't work as well.
What do you think it is? I mean, to use a broad term, fear, right? Things are changing. I don't understand it. And rather than try to learn it, I'm scared and I want to run from it. So what do you think it is that makes us do that? And then in talking to people who are successful disruptors, how do you think they approach these changes that's different from the people who are running?
I think that from what we learned in the research as we were talking to folks is one thing is that there's this fear because you don't know which way to go. You don't know what's going to happen next. You kind of want to cling to the way things are right now. And one of the things that we talk about in the book is there's this really kind of fundamental thing that we all have to realize that the status quo is not going to stay the status quo.
Right.
Things are going to constantly change. We're organic matter. That's your team at work. That's your organization. That's your family around the dinner table, if you even have one of those anymore.
Yes.
It's constantly changing. And the reality is you can't sit on top of the organization. You can't sit on top of your team. You can't sit on top of your startup. You can't sit on top of your family and dictate everything.
Right.
Yeah.
What you have to be able to do.
One of the things that this book is particularly good at is getting you to make that first step. That first step is really hard and really important. There's a woman, she has a book out now, or her first book was 5-4-3-2-1. And it was just making that first step. And what she was having problems in her life, and she just said, 5-4-3-2-1, get out of bed. 5-4-3-2-1, make that call for a new job. Make that first step. I just had a sister yesterday. She had to do a back operation, and her daughter is a doctor. And that's a tough decision to make.
Yeah.
And she had to make it that day. Make the decision. This book is really good at helping you take that first step, and then the second step, and then the third step, and then the fourth step.
Can you talk a little bit, Patrick, about this disruption project? You said you spoke to over 300 people to gather this data. What were some of the kind of surprising things you learned from successful disruptors? And what were some of the commonalities you may have seen?
Yeah, first of all, the study started because James talked to one of my classes at Vanderbilt. And he came back and he was talking to this class I was leading called Leading Business Through Times of Crisis. And he told his story. And actually, you might remember, you called the presentation that day, The Power of Disruption. And you went through this presentation where you talked about your career and your life, and you challenged the students to live a good life and asked them if they were living one. And when you stopped the presentation, when it was over, I was like, holy cow, that is really powerful, what he just went through. That idea of life's going to throw you curveballs. What are you going to do with them? And that kind of started this journey of studying disruptors around the world.
Are you leading a good life? Are you leading it? To be honest, with the college students, one of the things I said is, are you getting on a treadmill to get on another treadmill to get on another treadmill to die? Is that what you're doing? If you're okay with that, then that's fine. But are you okay with it? And are there options? Are there options? And maybe there are really much better options. I'm sorry, Patrick. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. And the interesting thing is, like, you have an N of one, right? You have James Patterson coming and saying his great good life, but then you have every student in the room, every person on this planet saying, okay, what's a good life to mean to me? And they're all different.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons we want to have a broad study is we wanted to get different slices of life experiences to figure out what people did. You asked me what stood out to me or surprised me in the research. As we went through all the interviews and culled through them and said, okay, what are the big things that they're talking about? We found a number of behaviors that they exhibit. James and I talk about 16 behaviors in the book, but not one person had all of these behaviors. Mm. Some people were more visionary. Some people were more roll up their sleeves. Some people. So what that starts to teach you is it doesn't matter where you are. You have some strengths that you can lean into that can take the curveballs that are thrown at you and do something big or small or whatever you want to do. And we provide you a process to do it.
And yes. You can make big changes or you can make small changes that are positive. But the thing is that they're positive. It's hard to just stand still right now. You stand still, you're probably going to get run over.
Well, and if I may, somebody asked me one time, what's the opposite of a positive disruptor? And you might think it's a negative disruptor, but that's not what it is. A negative disruptor, we all know, that's the curmudgeon, the difficult person. You walk in the meeting room and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're in there. The opposite of being a positive disruptor is a relentless pursuit of comfort. Okay. You keep thinking like, I can get back to the way it was. I want things to be comfortable. When you do that pursuit of comfort, you miss so many opportunities. And then as James says in the beginning of the book, all of a sudden you feel essentially disenfranchised, cheated, like you missed out on something.
Yeah, I want it to be the way it was. That's nice, and I'm with you on some level, but it's not happening. So what's the next thing you want?
Yeah, nostalgia has a great pulse.
And that's what this is about, too. What's the next thing you want? Because it's not going to be the way it used to be.
Well,
sorry.
For someone who's had such an amazing career and sustained career as you have had, James, is that an innate thing in you that makes you want to just keep pushing for something new? Obviously, you could have hung up your typewriter decades ago and been fine.
Yeah. I think it's built into me. What I always say is I don't work for a living. I play for a living because I love what I do. Somebody said you're lucky if you find something that you love to do and work, and then it's a miracle if somebody will pay you to do it. But I think to some extent, what this book is going to promise is whatever it is, whatever you're doing, you're going to do it better and you're going to like it better, whatever that might be.
So I usually ask guests on this show for a habit that they're happy to have and one that they wish they could ditch. And I'd love to hear both of yours, but I'd also love to hear what are the habits of these positive disruptors that you see over and over again?
Yeah. We actually see, though, there's behaviors that are kind of things that they can do different times they apply their behaviors. But then there's also these 27 positive disruptor moves we picked up on. And these are things that can make it real for you really quickly. So there's things like own the win. These people take a moment to celebrate the win. People don't. So if you're listening right now, you know, one thing you can do today is own the win. You do something good, team does something good, take a moment, celebrate before you just move on. Another one is they ask for more. And this is one because sometimes people feel like I'm just going to ask for more right away. You got to deliver on whatever you were hired to do. Let me get clear on that. But if you're delivering on stuff or if you're making things happen, it's okay to ask for more. Most leaders have more on their plate than they can handle. So be the person who comes up and helps them out. Another one is do the scary yes. We don't learn a lot when we're comfortable. We talked about comfort earlier. Do the scary yes. Boss opportunity, take it. Run with it. See what can happen. Do the thing that might scare you because that is oftentimes where we're learning the most. So there's these 27 things that say to you, hey, before you get out of bed, own the day.
Yeah, and this isn't, it's not that you have to do 27 things. You're going to pick the things that are going to work. And that's an important thing. This isn't, you know, like, as I said, it's not one thing. And it can work for really big corporations. We're already in business with our course with really large companies and some very small ones and some entrepreneurs. And we interviewed, Patrick and I, and we interviewed entrepreneurs, a lot of people who have done kind of exciting things, overcome amazing problems.
When we talk about getting out of our comfort zone, it is painful sometimes. The immediate results aren't always what we wanted. Hey, I want to learn how to play piano, and my God, I'm horrible at playing the piano. What are some of the, you know, I know there's a theory of when you give a kid a new food, they've got to taste it 5 times before they'll like it, or at least know if they like it or not. Is there any kind of guidance you give on that comfort zone to say, you are going to get better at this, or maybe you do just suck at piano and that's just not your thing?
I think that one of the things that the book does really well is it has compelling stories in it. as an overarching kind of lessons that it's putting together. And then it has tools that you can apply. But as Jim said, it really doesn't matter where you are as you approach the book. Maybe you are a connoisseur of a particular cuisine and you want to get a little bit better, or you're a kid that's never tasted this before. There's a space for you in the book to start applying those things today.
Yeah.
And that's what we see throughout the stories. We see people that some people dip their toe in the water a little bit more slowly and gather some more tinder, and other people.
But I think it's pretty pragmatic, helping you to deal with, you know, what really are your skills as opposed to the things that are going to be possible. If you're 260 pounds and you want to be a ballet dancer, we're not going to necessarily encourage, maybe, but you know, that could be a tough one. What else, some other skills that you have? You can dance at home, but you might not make it to Lincoln Center, right? But there are other skills. And identifying those skills and moving it, and keep it positive. You know, that's always important. Realistic. Realism is really useful. I have never, the things, people will look at some of the things I do and they go, well, that was really risky. I don't remember doing anything where I really thought it was hugely risky. I'm pretty sure that this is a good idea. If I would go in for a raise or whatever the heck it is.
Well, what about those moments that staying on this outside of our comfort zone? You know, we get scared, we get like panicked. How do people stay calm in situations where they're kind of feel like they're over their skis?
Yeah, so we talk about this a fair amount in the book about having to be uncomfortable at times. And we talk, and right now we know there's a lot of people talking about things like AI. AI is going to take away my job. AI is going to change everything. I don't know what to do. And one thing we ask people to do is like, look what's already in your hands. Look what you can do. I was talking to somebody not that long ago who is struggling with AI in that he felt like AI is going to take his job. He does a lot of writing at his company. He realized the CEO just gave a speech that ChatGPT wrote, and he's sitting there going, I'm going to lose my job. We started talking through the various roles that we share in the book. There's five different roles you could take on. And I said to him, do you see a world where it's possible where you could be more valuable to the company, not less valuable to the company, even in the face of AI? And after he thought about it for a few moments, he said, yeah, actually, I do. Okay, which of these roles might you take on? And he said, I need to take on that role. And as we started looking, then all of a sudden the opportunities opened up. So sometimes we close down too quickly. And I've experienced in my life that there's sometimes where people tell me something's going to be really, really hard. And it ends up being a lot easier than they suggest it would be. And conversely, they might say it's really easy and it can be really tough. But you have to get in the water yourself and explore
That's great advice. So we mentioned that this book also, there's a course that's involved with this. Can you talk a little bit about that and explain to people like what they're getting?
Yeah, well, James and I were looking for potential partners, and we decided to partner with the company, the Franklin Covey Company. Yeah, I worked with Stephen Covey many years ago. Stephen Covey wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And Franklin Covey is all about behavior change. And this book is all about behavior change. How do you accomplish a strategy, whether it's your personal strategy or your organizational strategy, that requires people to change behavior? And it was just a natural fit. When we had a conversation with them, we're like, we're the right partners for each other. We've done the research on this. We have a book that's extremely compelling. It's going to do really, really well. I know it is because it's going to change people's lives. But Franklin Covey is great at bringing courses like that to companies and to organizations. So we've had a chance to partner with them to do that. So they created a course called Disrupt Everything, Innovate for Impact. And it's the idea of telling people disruption isn't something to be avoided or fear or ignore or whatever it might be. It's something that might be fertile ground for opportunity.
And Franklin Covey has always been about change. Change is a little slower and more gradual than disruption. Disruption is much more powerful, faster. It's coming at us faster than, you know. And why is that happening? I think there are a lot of reasons why it's happening now. But that is what's going on. And this is dealing with these things that are coming every week. And they're really, they move fast and they're powerful. And we have to move fast and be powerful.
Yeah.
That's a hopeful thing.
Absolutely. So James, I'm curious how you two came together. James, you've worked with a lot of notable people over the years, some former presidents. How did you guys come together? And Patrick, what do you think of James as a collaborator?
Everybody likes working with me. Right. I know the collaborations have always been good with President Clinton. I mean, that turned into a really great friendship. Dolly Parton, another really great friendship. And in those cases, I wanted, among other things, their authenticity. And with Patrick, one of the things here has to do with his role as a college professor and the studies. This thing has been, the research was essential to this. And by the way, this is a book that we rewrote and rewrote and rewrote and rewrote we kept disrupting it because it wasn't, we kept getting it sharper and more useful and more pragmatic. And I wouldn't be here, Patrick wouldn't be here, if we didn't know this is going to help people. This is going to help people have better lives very, very quickly. It's going to help companies to work better. It's going to help teams work better. And that's important to us. Otherwise, you're out there, you're in front of a fraud, and neither one of us needs that.
No, not at all. And I would just put that James has been a great partner, an excellent partner. I mean, it's been great. He's helped me sharpen my skills. I think if I was to write this all myself, it would be so academic and kind of sit on a shelf and nobody would ever read it. And although I have a career in the military for a while and my own business, the last 11 years I've been at the university. And that kind of research shapes your mind about how you approach writing things. And I think together, you know, the research and the way that James is able to write something in a way that people want to keep reading it, like get to the end of one chapter and go to the next one, is really powerful. And I just, you know, I just appreciate the partnership in that regard. He's made me a better writer. Along the way, he's told me at certain times, like when we're dealing with like a rewrite and a rewrite and a rewrite, he might say to me, "Hey, Patrick, do you want to drink from the cup of joy or the cup of grief right now?" And I'm like, "The cup of joy. You're right. Let's keep going." It's been a great experience. But ultimately, what it comes down to is we're going to put something in people's hands that if they read it and apply it, whether they apply all of it or a little bit of it, it's going to make a big difference. And that's what it's all about.
So on this show, we ask our listeners to send in questions. James, we got a lot of questions about productivity from you. You're kind of famous for your for the amount of books that you've put out over the years. Anthony D. asks, do you block off time for work or do you wait for inspiration to hit?
No, I write. You know, as you said earlier, this notion of not working for a living, playing for a living, I love what I do. I wake up in the morning, I want to write. I want to tell a story. I want to, and I do it 7 days a week. And I have time for other things. You know, my wife and I will play nine holes of golf a lot of mornings. But we, you know, we play at like 6, 6:30 in the morning, we're done before 8. And then I'm at the typewriter with a computer, no typewriter anymore. And I find, you know, a lot of people, a lot of writers are like that. There are some that really don't like to write, but a lot of them, I work with Mike Lupica a lot, and Mike and I are the same thing. We both, I mean, I was just talking to Mike 20 minutes ago, and he's at his computer, and we're both working on a new book, and we love doing it. And when we talk to each other, it's like a writer's room on the telephone, but he loves what he does.
Fantastic.
He loves it.
And then we had another question from Dan D, who says, Tom Clancy bought a piece of the Orioles. Have you bought anything like that with your book money?
A little bit. Yeah, we have a little piece of a men's volleyball team, and we have another woman's soccer team. So we have a couple little pieces like that. I think women's sports, one, I love that it's happening. Two, I think a lot of the sports, I think women's basketball is really fun to watch. WNBA. Yeah. I'm going to interview Caitlin Clark soon. And women's volleyball is really fun to watch on television. Not the beach stuff, but when they're in the gyms. It's very exciting. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of, no, I'm not buying the Orioles.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I suppose I could buy the Orioles, but no thanks.
Well, okay, let's move into the speed round of this show. You can both jump in with your answers. What's better, the book or the movie?
The book.
Book.
Except The Godfather. The movie is better. And The Exorcist. The movie. The Exorcist, actually, both were good. The book and the movie were good on that one. I don't know that it dropped everything. I don't know. We'll get a movie on this one. But.
So what is something that you see out there, maybe on social media, advice that you see over and over again that you're just like, I wish this would go away. This is terrible advice. I wish people would stop reading this and sharing this. Anything spring to mind?
I think one for me that kind of gets me sometimes is all about your passion, like only follow your passion. We even talk in the book about passions and talents and inner voice. I mean, great, but if you could figure out a way to use your creative skills and actually make a living, that's pretty cool too. So I think sometimes just that only follow your passion without any path elsewhere can be really problematic.
Is there anything like that maybe that you see leaders maybe buying into something that maybe isn't the most productive thing or the best thing for them?
Leaders need to, one of the things a lot of leaders need to buy more into taking care of the people in their company. Walk in their boots, walk in their shoes, take care of them. If you take care of them, they'll take care of you.
And recognizing that taking care of them doesn't mean just only the softer side of like care for somebody. It can also mean the expectations and goals. Yeah. It's a balance of those two things, both expecting a lot and caring a lot from people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's excellent. Who's a better typer, James or Patrick?
Patrick.
We got an quick agreement on that one. And then finally, so a lot of us read a James Patterson thriller to chill out and turn our brains off at the end of the day. What do you do?
I read James Patterson thrillers at the end of the day. No, I'm a big reader. I'm a huge reader.
There you go. All right.
Read James Patterson thrillers.
I'm reading something now, Buckeye, which is quite good. It's an old-fashioned novel, but quite wonderful.
Excellent. Awesome. The book is coming out. It's probably out by the time people listen to this. What's the best way for them to follow up with it and to follow all things?
If you have the opportunity to take the course. Turn people in your company onto the course in terms of finding out more about it and read the book. As I said, I wouldn't have gotten involved in this if I didn't think it would help people a lot. Right.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that. In the book, there's many pages toward the back, especially of tools. And I think those tools are ones that you can revisit frequently, you can use over and over, that could really help you in your life and at home and at work to be more effective.
So can we sign off with one thing somebody listening to this can do like immediately, as soon as this episode ends, to kind of get on a path of being a positive disruptor?
I'll go with say the brave no, which is one of our suggestions in the book. The idea of like, you know, something's not right. It's not the right opportunity for you. Don't kick the can down the road. Just kill it and move on.
Yeah. Take the step, make the move, read the book, steal the book, whatever. Move forward. Don't stand still. Don't go backward. And don't think that the world's going to be the way it used to be. It's just not going to happen, even if that's an attractive idea.
Great. All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, what's the biggest hurdle that you feel like is getting in the way of your success? Let me know at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com, and I will ask our next guest.